and welcome to a new episode of From the Honeycomb Podcast. I am your host, Katerina Buranova. Each week, we dive into a blend of topics that resonate with the soul. Whether you're an architect enthusiast, have a passion for wanderlust, want to discover holistic approaches to rejuvenate your body and mind, or are intrigued to learn about Vastu Shastra with a modern approach, you've come to the right place. Join me as I sit down with inspiring, like-minded women from various walks of life. We will delve into their journeys to discuss the challenges and moments that define their paths. So sit back, relax, and let the spark of positive energy ignite your curiosity. Today, I am joined by Danny Schroeder, a transportation engineer and founder of STEM Changemaker, an organization educating the next generation about career paths in STEM. Danny received the 2023 Woman of Influence Rising Star Award and the CPEWC Young Engineer of the Year Award in 2022. Danny, welcome to From the Honeycomb Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm excited to have you on. And as you know, we begin every episode by sharing something that we are grateful for in the present moment. So Danny, what are you grateful for?
Yeah, right now I'm especially grateful for my supportive partner. He's always cheering me on to achieve my goals at work and beyond, as well as helping me with whatever he can when it comes to my STEM content creation.
Oh, that's incredible. It's so important to have that support network, especially in your partner, because the time it takes to work on these side projects, it's not just your job, having someone who supports you. It makes all the difference, and I think you're going to succeed even more having a supportive partner.
Absolutely.
And so, Danny, share with the listeners your journey to becoming a transportation engineer. What's brought you to today?
Sure. So I'll call it my engineering origin story, because that started at home, literally. My dad is a union carpenter and actually built the house that I grew up in, which not many people can say. So I grew up around construction and got to see how cool it is to see like blueprints come to real life. Through, you know, the side projects my dad would do around the house, you know, expand the house and do little things throughout the years that I grew up in the house, but also through his work. So I got to see a variety of projects that he got to work on through the greater Philadelphia area. And I loved math and science all throughout school. And you would think that I would have heard about engineering, you know, sometime earlier than I did, but it wasn't until my junior year of high school that my biology teacher saw this engineering girls camp and is like, you like math and science? Why don't you go to this? So I went to that local engineering girls camp at a local college and honestly fell in love and kind of heard that civil engineering would be the perfect major for me because it takes that love of construction and my math and science love and puts them together perfectly in like a great matrimony. So civil engineering was the major I chose when going to college. I ended up going to Drexel University, which is a local college in Philadelphia, went through their five-year program. I believe it was like the late of my second year, I applied for the BSMS program and got accepted. In those 5 years, I graduated with both bachelor's and master's in civil engineering, which is pretty cool. Definitely some very long days into the early mornings of studying and getting through both graduate and undergraduate classes and balancing all that through the 5 years, but it was 100% worth it. And then graduated in 2017. And then since then, I've been working in the transportation industry in private consulting, working on a variety of different projects for a variety of different clients throughout the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Wow, that's incredible. I went to a tech school, Illinois Tech, so I know a few of my friends did civil engineering. But can you share with the listeners, because I know I've had a lot of architects on, but you're the first civil engineer. And that's why I wanted to have you on, because first, also, I wanted to say, I love your story about having started to have that seed was planted for you so early on. And I think that's really important, especially being able to succeed then in your career, because you've kind of, it's been slowly evolving within you. And as you've been achieving these goals and, you know, getting accepted to university, then going through, you know, university and then the awards and now the STEM organization that you have, the STEM Changemaker, which we'll also talk about. I think that's really incredible. But for listeners who don't know what a civil engineer does, can you explain what does a civil engineer do?
Sure. So generally speaking, I say civil engineers work on things that are needed for civilization, kind of why the name has civil engineering in it. So that could be infrastructure in terms mm-hmm. of maybe things directly that you think of is our roads, our bridges, our highways, our dams, all those different things, sports stadiums, technically civil engineers work on.
Very true.
Yeah, but other parts of the infrastructure side of it that you don't think of is like clean drinking water or when you go flush a toilet, like how all of that works. There's civil engineers that work on that. But that's generally what I say of we work to design, build, and then maintain our infrastructure.
I know it's funny. I know what a civil engineer does, but like, you know what they do, but they don't, you don't know, even though I had friends who went to civil, you know, did civil engineering and I work with civil engineers. Like this past week, I had two civil engineers I worked with, but you described it so perfectly and so eloquently, like you're helping civilization. And there is so much that goes into the infrastructure that people don't think about. And then who is that team working on it? And that's you.
Yeah. Well, yes and no. Similar to what you just said, again, I'm on the transportation side, but our building side, they're working with civil engineers, they're working with other engineers, they're working with architects. Like it's a whole team that are bringing these things to fruition. But yeah, and civil engineering itself can be so broad. Like I'm in transportation, but there's structures, there's geotechnical. So all of the things focused underground to make sure that we can have a viable skyscraper mm-hmm. above ground. So it's a lot of different things and a lot of different paths that you can go into with a civil engineering degree.
Oh, for sure. And what is the licensing process?
Yes. So there are two major exams, the FE, the Fundamentals of Engineering, and then the PE, the Principles and Practice of Engineering. I took the FE when I was a senior in college, mm-hmm. thankfully passed the first time. So that was good. Yay. Done with. Yeah. And then graduated college. And then once I graduated from an ABET accredited school, passed the FE, then I can apply to be an EIT or engineer in training or EI engineering intern. It really just depends what location, what board you're applying to become that. So once I graduated, applied, became an EIT in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And then again, in Pennsylvania, you need 4 years of progressive engineering experience. It does vary based on locale, but after you get that 4 years of engineering experience, then you can apply for the PE exam, which is what I did in early 2022. And then you get approved by the board in Pennsylvania. And then I sat for the PE exam. Unlike the FE, it did take me multiple times to pass the PE. But that is perfectly okay. It's important to, you know, continue with those goals. And I mm-hmm. really wanted to become a PE or a professional engineer. So I failed the first time. Thankfully, our exams somewhat recently became CBT or computer-based testing. Okay. So I was able to sign up a few months later to retake the exam. Thankfully, passed it on the second time and then became a PE or professional engineer near the end of 2022.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's huge. That's a huge achievement. And so I know in architecture, if you're not licensed, you can't call yourself an architect. And you can practice architecture, but you can't put the stamps on your own stamp on the drawings. Is that similar with civil engineering or is it different?
It's similar in the stamp part. So there is no mm-hmm. stamp seal of that. Clearly I'm still working on engineering drawings, engineering calculations. Mm-hmm. Generally, I'm still able to call myself an engineer. It does get a little bit tricky. Certain companies will have engineer in the title. Certain companies will not have engineer until you have your PE. So that part varies a little bit, but I think it's usually designer. Like you would just be transportation designer in terms of before you get your PE. But yes, once I'm licensed, then I am able to stamp and seal those drawings.
Wow. Okay. That makes sense. And so what do you do in kind of your day-to-day job as a transportation engineer? Because I have no experience with ever speaking to a transportation engineer. I'm in residential architecture. So my civil engineer, we talk about, you know, the drainage and, you know, regrading, but that's it. So what do you do as a transportation engineer?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned drainage and grading. That is similar to things that I'm working on because, again, if you have a bridge, you kind of need to regrade the connection back to the roadway or different things like that. Drainage is very important, especially on bridges and transportation in general, just making sure when it rains, there is a place for that water to go so that, you know, mm-hmm. you don't have things like hydroplaning happening when you're in a vehicle. So making sure that the drainage goes different places. Various other calculations in terms of things, for example, guide rail. So the different fencing that you'll see, it's much smaller kind of fencing, but you'll see that on the sides of roads that's there. Just hopefully never have to have that being used, but it's there if you know, a car goes into it, because it's supposed to try to keep you from not going, you know, again, if we're on a bridge, not going down onto the road below or whatever is down below. So different things like that. But again, drainage, traffic control. So when we're actively doing things for construction, you have to put together traffic control of, hey, you know, we may be shutting down one of two lanes in this direction, but how are we going to do this safely? And how are we safely going to communicate this to our drivers of, hey, the lane's going to shift or something of those kind of things. So just a variety of different things that I'm working on. And it really, really depends what projects I'm working on. The fun part of my job is that every day is a little bit different. Like, I don't know if I necessarily have a typical day. Sometimes I'm working from home, which is where I am now. Sometimes I'm working from the office. Sometimes I'm going on site to do a site visit. It's a variety of different things that I'm working on in a variety of different locations, which is what I find fun about my role.
Nice. It's great when your job isn't the same every day and it challenges you and you problem solve. And it seems like you're already someone who had that personality of, like, you want to figure stuff out. You liked math. And so it made sense. Like, seems like you are, like, in the perfect profession for yourself. Like, you, even when you're talking about, you know, your work, like, I can see it, like, radiating from you. You're like, this is what you're passionate about.
Yeah. And that's a great point. I know we're going to talk about, like, STEM outreach a little bit later. Yes. But whenever I do STEM outreach, I do like to talk about math and science, because you do kind of need to like math and science to get into engineering, but you don't need to be the best at it. The way I like to rephrase it is that engineering, we are professional problem solvers. So whatever engineering discipline that you go into, you are going to be solving problems. It'll just depend on what kind of field that you're going into.
No. And we can talk about STEM Changemaker if you'd like right now, because I think, yeah, this is a great segue into it. So yeah, tell us about your organization.
Yeah. So kind of going off of my engineering origin story and learning so late kind of became the catalyst for myself to be like, I want to do STEM outreach beyond what I do in my role. So STEM Changemaker was one of those outlets that I thought was a great way to be able to showcase all the fantastic things that you can do in STEM. Kind of STEM Changemaker specifically, I like to kind of show folks other fields beyond mine. I do talk about my field, but I also talk about other parts of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. One of my favorite parts of what I do with that is every March, March is Women's History Month. So every March, I showcase a woman a day in the STEM fields, typically historical women, but I do kind of switch it up a little bit. And like, I've learned so much about fantastic women in STEM throughout the years from doing this for the last few years.
And it's so important to highlight, you know, other women who are in the profession and who have come before us, because that's a huge inspiration for the incoming generation as well. And I really love that you're reaching out to the youth, because it was through school that I learned about architecture. I was about 10, 11 years old. There was a team that came to our school because the town I lived in suburbia, but the town was really newly established. It was a new suburban town. And so the team that came in to talk about the school with us, one of the women was an architect, and she was the only woman on the team. And that really inspired me, because all of a sudden you see yourself like, oh, that's a possibility of a role that I can have. So I think it's incredible that you're empowering, you know, not only the next generation, but also there's an example for young women out there that, you know, it isn't just and I know you sent me an incredibly great article about, we're not using the word male dominated, we're using majorly male.
Majority men.
And I had a conversation with my husband about that. He's a general contractor, and he was talking about that I work in a highly male-dominated industry. And I think the article that you sent me, which I'll provide a link in the show notes for anybody who wants to read it, and I included it in my monthly newsletter this month, I mean, because I wanted everybody to read it. But it's so true, by changing the vocabulary of, we are in a male-dominated industry, but it is majority male, and things are changing, and we need to evolve with the times.
Yeah, no, 100%. Like, words matter. So trying to, and again, I still go back to that of like the male dominant field, but I'm trying to say of majority men, because it taking the domination part out of it is like saying that they control everything. And we're trying to, no, it's not about that. It's mainly men in our field right now. I know I looked up before this on the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Civil engineering is only about 17% women. So,
wow,
it's a little low, yeah. But by saying majority male, it's more of the circumstances that you're in, not the control part of it, which is kind of a nice part. But yeah. And then going back to what you were talking about of the STEM outreach side of, I 100% agree with that, for the fact of you can't be what you can't see. So seeing a woman architect or a woman engineer, and you know, those students seeing that as young as 10 is like, I can see myself in that field. And it's a little harder when you don't see someone that looks like you in that field. Those things are another part of why I'm so fueled to do STEM outreach, especially for young women that might be interested in the field.
No, absolutely. And so do you go to schools? Do you have camps? Like, how do you provide these outreach programs?
Yeah, it is a variety of different things. Of course, before March 2020, a lot of it was typically going to classrooms. That has come back a little bit, but some of the things I've done virtually and even through 2020, it kind of got a pivot in terms of how even teachers would have certain things. Like, I've zoomed into a classroom, they were back in person, but they weren't having any outside visitors come in. And I read them a story, Rosie Revere Engineer, and then answered questions about what I do as a civil engineer. And that can still be impactful itself. I think I had generally the same kind of setup. And one of the kids asked me about my background. And if you can see right there, I have a hard hat sitting here and a few other things. So I got to actually talk to them about having my hard hat, and I had my PPE. I actually had the vest off to the side. So like, honestly, it was kind of perfect that it was virtual, because I don't usually bring a hard hat or, you know, my high visibility vest with me. So it's kind of led to things like that. But beyond classroom visits, we have a local STEM museum that I'll use, or science museum that I'll frequently volunteer at, that they'll do like tabling events, and then a variety of different things in terms of a virtual STEM outreach as well. So it does definitely vary.
No, and that's incredible. Like I said, I think the outreach program and letting know the next generation, there is so much out there that you can do, and the possibilities, especially for women now, I mean, it's incredible. And so I think you are paving the way for so many future engineers and anybody who wants to do STEM. So I think you're doing great work.
Well, thank you. And it's not just me. I mean, I have a fantastic group of folks that I work with, especially so like locally, ASCE, Philadelphia, YMF, or Younger Member Forum. I frequently volunteer with them, where there's two people that are the awesome co-chairs that are leading it right now that are setting up these classroom visits or different things like that. And they're always just looking for volunteers. And of course, I raise my hand as much as possible for those. So it is other people that are setting up some of these fantastic things, and I'm just helping them with it. But all of it's important.
And it's great networking as well, which is one thing I think also, like you mentioned, coming out, you know, in 2020 and then everything being online, being able to connect with others in person, and you never know where those relationships are going to go. And I think that even just within and of itself, it's good practice to network. I found, now that I work for myself this last year, I have found that networking has been a game changer for me business-wise, but previously I hadn't really networked. I never really, you know, put myself out there. And so I think you're already setting yourself up for whatever path you may take in the future, you're going to have this network behind you.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I've definitely seen it. It's a little bit easier to talk about networking when it comes to professional societies, only because like when I was a student, I went to some of those YMF events as a student. And, you know, there's maybe like 20 people on that board. And of the 20 people on that board, maybe they worked at like 15 different organizations. So like I was making connections with all of them. And, you know, when it came time to looking for that first full-time job, I've already built that connection with them. So it was like an easy of, hey, you know, I'm looking for a job. Do you know any open opportunities? Where I think, I forget who made this analogy, but it was something along the lines of like, networking is like having plants or like growing a garden. It takes time for that plant to grow over time. It's not going to blossom immediately. So you got to put some time and effort and sunshine and water and all of that into growing a flower or growing plants, and similar with networking.
That is so true. That is a perfect analogy. Because I was just talking to someone this past week about, you know, the efforts you have to put into networking and being part of a club. And you can't expect to, you know, show up to one meeting and have a network of people to work with. Like, yes, they'll welcome you, but you also have to put in the effort. It can't just be a transaction. It has to also be you putting in that effort of, I want to get to know people. And then it becomes more organic. And like you said, like it's growth, like a plant.
And random tip that kind of goes with networking of, I'm an introvert, so networking can be a little bit intimidating for myself. So especially when I was getting very used to networking or going to different events, I would volunteer to help at the events. So like even just, you know, saying, hey, do you need someone to run your name tag table, which is honestly a perfect part of the networking because you get to see people's faces and put a name to a face with the physical name tag. That's definitely helped me get more comfortable with networking because, you know, I'm there for a specific job too, but then I'm also still doing networking. So if you are an introvert like myself and you're trying to get into networking, see if you can volunteer for an upcoming event in doing something like that. It definitely has helped me get better at it.
That's great advice. That's great advice because it is. You just start small and you're right. I mean, the name tags, that is the perfect place. Plus you meet them right away and then you can see them later on. So that's very smart tool, very smart tool. I want to go back to kind of what you do at work. And I meant to ask this question earlier, and this may be like the silliest question, but I'm curious. So you talked about traffic control and you're designing roads and where the guards are and stuff. Are you the one who decides who the what mile per hour it is on the road?
So to a degree, again, a lot of times we're not building new roads. We're going, and again, as I talked about civil engineering, we're maintaining, designing, and maintaining that more important part, maintaining of our infrastructure. So a lot of times it's really the same of what is already out there. But we do more of our traffic engineers within transportation, more focus on things like that. And they'll do like speed studies or different things like that based on, because the speed comes with a variety of different things. It's how curvy is the road, I'll call it, because you've got your horizontal alignment. So up and down as you go kind of up and down hills. Sometimes you probably don't feel it, but like grade up and down, as well as that would be vertical. And then in horizontal, you can go left, right. So that kind of varies on in terms of what the speed limit would be. But yes, generally that is in our field. A lot of times it's already established, but we can do things like speed studies, traffic analysis to see if that speed study or speed limit should be changing in the future.
Interesting. I was just thinking about it. I was like, who does decide like what the speed limit is? And then as you were talking, I'm like, this sounds like the Department of a Civil Engineer is like someone who will figure out and calculate what the speed should be because I drive fast. So, and I'm from California where even though the speed limit is 65 on our freeways, everybody drives 85. So I was wondering where that all came from. But so it's interesting. And there is just so much that the day-to-day driver doesn't think about, that how much thought goes into it. And especially, and you bring up the point of maintaining. And that kind of makes sense because you're on the East Coast, more of your roads, I would say, are existing. Some parts of California, we still have a few new roads coming in. I know a lot of roads are being maintained or like revitalized right now, especially when it's like the off season, not summertime. So not everyone's at the beach. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of work goes into it. And I think a lot of people don't recognize just how much work it is to maintain the infrastructure, especially of cities, and keep the traffic flowing. And, you know, we are a country that is focused heavily on driving cars. And so it is a huge aspect of our day-to-day lives, and we don't think about what is all involved.
Yeah. Going back to, yes, of civil engineering, a lot of, I will say, the general public takes a lot of what we do for granted. Again, you know, they expect the road to be there. When they go to the bridge, they expect the bridge to be open and working and a lot of different things like that. So yeah, a lot that we work on is taken for granted, but it's very important to, you know, our daily lives.
No, absolutely. And then, so most of the work that you do then, would it be through the government, like the Department of Transportation? I've never asked this question and I'm kind of curious, how does that work? Do you work with the government or is it private companies?
So being on private consulting, yes, it does vary. We have a variety of clients. One of our major clients is PennDOT, and you know, they have specific standards that we follow and we go through a specific process. But usually what it is on private consulting is they put out a RFP or request for a proposal. And, you know, we submit proposals and we say, okay, this is the anticipated team that we're going to have on this proposal. You know, if it's a roundabout design or something like that, these are the three roundabouts we did in the last 5 years. We have the specialists in roundabouts. I'm not that by any means, but things like that is what we kind of put into the RFP. And then a variety of companies will be submitting these RFPs, and then the client, for in this case PennDOT, would select from those two who will be the prime consultant on that, because the other part of it is that you can also bring in subs or sub consultants on these jobs where, you know, maybe we don't have a roundabout expert, but this small DBE has a roundabout expert, and that's mainly what they focus on. So we bring them in on the team to bring this project together, because usually it's not just a roundabout design. It's a huge project, and that's just a part of it. So you bring together a good team that has different strengths to those RFPs.
Yeah, for sure. And from what's the estimated time, or like what's usually the time from when you sign up a project and your proposal is approved to, and I know this depends, there's so many variables, like I get it, like the scope of work and the timeline, but because it always seems like the road construction projects always take so long. And I get it, like you're dealing with a flow of traffic that used to be able to drive on this road. Like you mentioned, people take it for granted. Oh, well, why wasn't this road? You know, the road was here yesterday. And then I know projects take a while because you guys are working in conditions where you have to keep the flow of traffic in most cases. And so how do you estimate how long a project is going to take?
Yeah. Generally speaking, it does depend because, yeah, those major projects are going to be a multi-year project in construction because of, again, of as much as I would love to be able to, you know, just shut down 95 and be able to do the whole construction in one thing, feasibly, we can't do that. We have to do traffic control. We have to do it by lanes, by stages, kind of part of that. So it's kind of going off of different things like that of, and kind of working with our contractors. So I'm mainly on the design side. There are, you know, civil engineers that work primarily in the construction engineering part of it that are the ones that are at the actual site as it's being constructed and all that different part. But working with those contractors, working with our construction engineers of how long do you estimate that this would take? Again, concrete takes 28 days to cure, depending, or OG concrete. I know there's different things that we can put in concrete, depending also where we are with the weather, et cetera, all that. Yes. But like, that's a huge factor of being able to continue a project. But they can be multi-year projects, or sometimes things will be on an expedited schedule, which usually increases the cost. But for example, I was working on a small project, drainage improvement project for a local township near Philadelphia. They needed this project done before the school year because it was right near a school and they can't have this part closed because it's very close to the school. So it's things like that where we were on an expedited schedule. Like I think that was like 6 to 8 months to get it in so that they could do construction. Well, sorry, 6 to 8 months for design. And I think it was a 2 month or 3 month construction process. Mind you, it was a small project, but still right. Of doing that all to just make sure that they would be able to have it done before the school year. So it really all depends on what kind of project we're talking about.
This is I'm so interested by this because like I said, I've never sat down with a civil engineer and like asked them questions, and especially one in transportation. And so what software programs do you use?
Yeah. So it's mainly CAD programs. On my side, in transportation, generally speaking, we're usually using Bentley products. So that's okay. MicroStation, Open Roads, all of that. But I know other clients or even other organizations will use AutoCAD or Civil 3D, or I know you probably are familiar with Revit because I think that's usually the architectural side of it. So both of those kind of CAD programs are pretty much very similar in terms of functionality, but we are definitely more focused on the Bentley MicroStation side at our organization.
Interesting. And then here's a question I've been asking anybody and everybody lately is, how is AI coming into your field? And have you used it yet?
I have not used it yet, which the funny thing is, I have not used it in my field yet. But I would say like the number one question I get when I do STEM outreach events now of like how AI can be used. I'm sure it's going to come into more process sooner than later, but I haven't been using it yet. But like, I do see that it's going to have some capabilities to help with things, or hopefully, you know, we're still doing the data. Let's say geotechnical, for example, like we're still going out, we're still doing, you know, the different testing and such, and maybe using AI to help us craft our communication in terms of the report of how we put this together in terms of communicating what needs to be part of that, that AI could be helpful for that. I know there's still some bugs that need to be worked out in terms of AI. Like I've used it more personally.
Yes.
I've used it to be like, hey, plan me a trip for New Orleans, a 3-day trip in New Orleans of these different things. And it does well in terms of that. But like, I definitely remember it saying like, do breakfast over here and then lunch here, but then go back here for dinner. So like, it wasn't perfect in terms of like, it was a little silly of certain things So like, again, bring that to the technical side. I'm sure it's still got some bugs to work out, and it's not something we can heavily rely on yet, but I do see that there's going to be hopefully some uses for it in the future so that, you know, we can focus on the important parts of the design and still have some of the like more meticulous work be done through that in the future.
Now, you've perfectly described how AI is coming into like your field, and I can kind of like echo that with architecture. Is we know it's coming, it's going to help us, it's not going to take our jobs because there's still so much that we bring to the table, but having AI help, especially with like reports, and for me it's for renderings. Like, I've started to experiment with some of the rendering software because I just work, I'm a one-woman show, it's my company, and renderings take forever. But here I was able to take something I built in 3D without any materials, put it into an AI generator, and within 10 to 20 seconds, I had three versions of a rendered product. Once I fed it like information, like here's the material, roof material, you know, I want it to be stucco, here's what the background looks like, whatever, it's, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, sun studies, I located it in the world somewhere, but it took 20 seconds rather than having it outsourced and taking, you know, hours and multiple days. So I'm seeing it as a tool to help me because I can't do everything. So I'm thinking about outsourcing it to AI because it is so quick, which I know it's, but it's something I'm experimenting with. And it sounds like you've even on the personal front, I agree. It's so much fun. Like ChatGPT, I love ChatGPT. Like I use it almost daily at this point, but for efficiency, like it is so efficient. It helps me write emails. Like I'll sit down and instead of taking 30 minutes to draft some sort of precise email about something, I drop what I'm trying to say into ChatGPT, and then I extract what I still make it sound like myself, and then I extract it, and then but it takes half the time, and then I can move in. I don't have to charge my client 30 minutes of emails. It's 15 minutes, and then I move on to the next task.
Exactly. And you gave a perfect example of like the rendering example of AI is helpful, but right now it definitely still needs our expertise. It needs to be spoon-fed some, you know, direction. It's not perfect, but it's, making those tools work for you. AI is a tool that can help you, you know, be more efficient with things moving forward. But yes, I'm saying I need to write, this is the purpose of the email, write me the email. That's an excellent way to be using it.
No, for sure. For sure. I have heard of people using it for trips. So I think I'm going to do that for the next trip just to see like what it kind of comes up with. I like that idea. That is true. And it's funny that you mentioned that that's the number one question you get asked, especially I think with the incoming generation, the next generation, they are going to be so heavily based in technology. Because did you do any sort of hand drafting?
No.
You probably wouldn't, would you? No. Because I know like by architecture, I still hand drafted, but less and less people are hand drafting. So, but you wouldn't have hand drafted.
No, we didn't do any of that. I definitely saw some various models of our architecture as well as our architectural engineering folks during school doing different models throughout the time. But we did a little bit of CAD in terms of college, but yeah, no hand drafting in terms of that.
No, that makes sense. You've gone digital. Well, Danny, if there's someone listening who is thinking about becoming a civil engineer, and, you know, I don't know what age groups listen to my podcast, but if there's someone thinking about becoming a civil engineer, maybe they're later in life, they're like, oh, this sounds really interesting. What would be your advice to them?
Yes, do it. But for sure, reach out to folks that you see in that field. As we kind of touched on, civil engineering can be so broad. So reach out. If you see someone that has an awesome career in civil engineering that you are interested about, like, don't be afraid to reach out to them and ask them more questions about what they're specifically doing. I know I've already mentioned this before, but especially, you know, for our younger audience, while there is a lot of math and science to what I do, and you kind of have to like it, you do not need to be that A+ student in math and science that I know some fantastic engineers that are not the best in math and science, but still make excellent engineers. So don't let that hold you back in terms of wanting to become a civil engineer. And we definitely need you in this field. I know, especially with the Infrastructure and Jobs Act that's out right now, I think based on all the work that we have right now, we don't have enough civil engineers to get the work done or maintain the work that we have, because there's so much that could be doing. I know you were talking about California, and California is more, I say, relatively new compared to very historic Philadelphia, where I'm located. But a lot of our infrastructure is aging, and it needs maintenance. So that's kind of where that like statistic comes from. It's just like the maintenance that needs to be done on our infrastructure. We don't have enough civil engineers right now to get it all done. So we need more in our field.
I did not know that. I mean, the 17% of females in civil engineer, that surprised me. I was thinking maybe it'd be closer to like quarter at least, but that not having enough civil engineers for, you mentioned the transportation, was it the Transportation Act, right?
The IIJA.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that's what it's called. I know. I was going to ask actually about that act, but I couldn't remember the name of it because so much. I know we have Caltrans in California, and since that act passed, that was some of the traffic that has changed on my way to work, or my previous work is along Coast Highway, Highway 1, and they have been doing so much work there since the act has passed.
Yeah, it's the IIJA is Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. I think I was forgetting investment before, but it's under the, or it's part of the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, or BIL. So yes, a lot of acronyms, but yes, because of all of that, it's a really exciting time to be a civil engineer because there's so much work out there for us to be working on, which is pretty exciting.
That's great. Well, I mean, I guess in the sense, the positive aspect of that is the job security, which is good.
For sure.
Which is good. Well, Dani, thank you so much for this conversation, for answering all my questions, even my miles per hour question, which I get it. I feel like I've learned so much. And like I said, I've worked with civil engineers, went to school. I had a roommate who was a civil engineer. And like, I kind of knew, what a civil engineer does, but you have really painted the picture of the profession in such a way that is so understandable. Just so understandable for anybody listening, especially if someone who doesn't work in architecture or in the construction industry. So thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I absolutely love this conversation and love to answer questions about civil engineering in general and what I specifically do as a civil engineer in transportation.
No, and I can tell, like, you are very passionate about being a civil engineer, and just like I said, you radiate when like you talk about it. You're definitely passionate. So I really appreciate you taking the time. And where can listeners find you?
Yeah, on most social media platforms, I'm at Dani the Engineer.
Perfect. I'll provide links in the show notes, and I'll provide a link for your STEM Changemaker website as well.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right, Dani. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of From the Honeycomb Podcast. As we conclude, I want to express my gratitude for joining me in today's episode. I hope you have found it insightful and inspiring. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to rate, review, and click that like button so you never miss an episode. And don't forget to share this with your friends. You can follow me on Instagram at From the Honeycomb Podcast, and you can also further your support of From the Honeycomb by visiting the Patreon link provided in the show notes. Your contribution helps make more episodes possible. And lastly, don't forget to subscribe to my monthly newsletter, A Spark of Positive Energy, that comes out on the 7th of each month. Thank you so much, and see you next Friday.